Okay. So, yeah, so in this talk, we'll be reporting on some progress that we made on efficient methods to calculate basically first passage time distributions. So this will be on based on joint work with Aleksandar Mijatović, who's also present here. So, okay. So let me simply immediately jump to this. So our motivation for this work, for basically our interest in efficient methods and also theoretical properties of first passage time distributions, originates in several questions in several areas in quantitative finance, where these first passage time distributions and first passage time problems naturally occur. So, for example, you have areas foreign exchange and equity, where barrier type options are among the most liquidly traded options. And so, barrier type options, so common traded types, are then double and touch options or double or single knockout options, knock in call or put options. And so, those are options. Of course, as all of you will know, but still, I'm going to say it again. So there's options. Those are options that depend, whose value depend not only on the value of the underlying F maturity, but also on whether a certain set has been visited or not. And so it's a path-dependent option, and its valuation. To efficiently value these type of options, you need to have a handle on efficient methods to characterize the first passage time distributions and perhaps more importantly, also the sensitivities or the grids. And so not only in foreign exchange area and equity area, but you also see in credit risk, naturally, first passage time problems turn up. For example, in structural models, these models are typically defined in terms of first passage of some underlying firm value process to some boundary. And so there are, in different areas, there is really an interest in characterizing and efficiently calculating these first passage time distributions. So, so just to be a bit more precise, what we will be looking at, so we will mainly simply phrase the problems that we will be looking at. We will simply use the equity or / foreign exchange terminology, but one can also easily transpose this to the credit type setting. So the sort of contract that we will be looking at is a barrier type contract. So this is the most general form can be seen to be of this form. So you have a payoff GST that you only receive if the first passage into some set, you could call this the knockout set, happens after maturity. So this is the first term is the first term here is this knockout type payoff, and then we say well, in addition, we also allow for payoff, part of the payoff that depends actually on, so if in the complementary event that knockout occurs before maturity, we allow for payoff that actually depends on the value of the underlying at first passage. So this is some sort of, one can think of this as a rebate or recovery value or whatever. Right. So this TA is the first passage time into this set of A. And so we take here, one can think here of S as the asset price. And so we are in the one dimensional setting in this case. And so we knock out set to simply take to be the union of two intervals, where this L and U are allowed to lie between 0 and infinity. So it's, which in principle, in particular, includes the European case, but also the usual cases of double barrier options, but also down, out, and up and out. So this is the sort of contract that we will be interested in, and this contain most of the cases of interest. And so, just to define the sort of problem that you will be interested in this talk, we are basically interested in evaluating this expectation. So, and indicates that this S is an asset type process, and actually the discounted process forms a martingale, where LR is the risk-free rate, and indeed this, you know, by standard considerations, this is the arbitrage-free price of the Barry contract in question. And so it is now then of interest to efficiently evaluate these expectations, and possibly also the degrees. So, so it's clear, if you look at this, that here we are dealing with the path-dependent option, so the valuation is slightly more non-trivial than when you were in the European case, in which case the valuation only depends on the marginal distribution at maturity. So in this case, we have something that is path-dependent and actually depends on the whole path of the underlying, because at maturity you also have to know whether or not the stock price process has entered this set A or not. So in principle, one would think, okay, this is really of more difficult. It's more difficult in principle. It's more non-trivial than just valuing European type claims. Now, so okay, so what is the class of models for which this is of interest? So in principle. So in the literature, you see there's a whole zoo of models that has been considered. But by considering the empirical data, it has been observed that in many cases, what you need for an accurate fit and for accurate calibration, etc., etc., you need two things in general. In general, for the short, so-called the short end of the implied volatility, you really do need jumps. You like jumps to be present in the in your model, and also it confirms the intuition that in many cases there are jumps, and there are many empirical studies that confirm that the jumps are present. On the other hand, you like that to be state-dependent volatility, so state-dependent volatility and jumps. So one is interested in valuation where the underlying is a Markov process with state-dependent volatility and or jumps. And so here are a number of model classes that have been considered. And so it started all off in the good old diffusion world, with, for example, the CFV model of Davidov and Minetsky. Later, people already observed that the jumps are very desirable in the evolution and consider jump diffusion models. So, for example, the Kuhn model and the Merton model with compound Poisson. So, the jump component forms a compound Poisson process with normally distributed and exponentially distributed, double exponentially distributed log jumps. And later, people did empirical research and actually found out that in many cases it's not even needed to include the diffusion components. You can look at pure jump models. So, for example, I named three big contributors. So you have Eberlein and his group, you have Bondock Nielsen, and you have Carr and co-authors, who have studied it in detail and have studied these types of models in detail, and shown that in many cases you obtain a very good calibration. And then, in, for example, commodity type settings or other settings, it might be useful to look at generalized Ornstein-Uhlenbeck models. So it's again Barnard Nielsen and co-authors that have looked at this. And so you see, in all cases, we are dealing with a Markov process with that have state-dependent volatility and or jumps. And so you in principle, our task as people in mathematical finance is, of course, to develop models that do not impose restrictions on the modeler. You don't want to tell the modeling department, well, unfortunately, we can only deal with diffusion, so that's the model you have to stick to. You don't want to say that. Now, simply the modeler has to look at the data, has to come up with the model that best fits the data is the best for risk management purposes, and then, you know, it's our task in as financial mathematicians to say, okay, we will develop models that can simply efficiently deal with these cases without putting too many restrictions on the side of the modeler. You know, the modeler looks at the data, and so he says, okay, this is, they deliver a model, and they say, okay, this is a good model, because we have been looking for hours and hours and hours and days and days and days, and we looked at the data, and this is it. And then you say, okay, if that is it, then we take that and we do the evaluation with that. That's how it should be, and so that's our motivation. And so, of course, people have, a lot of work has already been done on evaluation of barrier type options. So, for example, in the setting of diffusions, certain diffusions, I have to say, not all of them, but there are certain diffusions, it's also related to certain explicit solutions of the Sturm-Liouville field problem, for which you can actually obtain an explicit spectral decomposition. So Linetsky and Coulthard and Lipton have shown that, if for your particular diffusion model you can obtain a spectral decomposition, then this is the best thing you can obtain. This is really the best. But unfortunately, this is for a rather restricted range of diffusions that you can do this. For Levy processes, using the independence of increments and stationarity, the Wiener-Hopf factorization holds true, and a transform approach has been developed by several people, so first by Ku and Wang, and later by Boyashenko, Lewandowski, and other people. And so that's in those two cases, so for the surplus of diffusions, for Levy processes, those methods are very efficient. And the problem, you say, okay, you know, these methods are already there. But, of course, we are saying, okay, in many cases, you have stochastic volatility as well as jumps. And then it's not so clear how to use either of those approaches in that case. You know, they haven't been developed. On the other hand, you say, okay, but, you know, we have Monte Carlo and we have the PDE and PIDE methods. But in general, it's true. I mean, I think it is fair to say that for, you know, if you take general Monte Carlo or general PDE, PIDE methods, then those are well known to be simply not so fast, right? Rather slow, and in the case of Monte Carlo, unstable, and you have lots of problems. So there you see, this is the motivation. We have this problem. We see the existing methods. There's a gap. There's a clear gap there, and that's what we are going to try and address. There is another method, and this is the method that we are going to focus on in this talk. That's the so-called Markov chain method. So this goes back to Kouchner on an optimal control setting. So his idea was, in an optimal control setting, you are attempting to solve a complicated optimal control problem, and you have some, in his case, he was especially looking at diffusions, so you say, okay, I cannot solve it, so what I do, I'm going to approximate the diffusion by Markov chain, and I can explicitly solve it, or it is tractable for the Markov chain. And then my idea is, okay, I'm going to approximate this diffusion by Markov chains, and then I hope that the convergence carries over. And actually, he has shown, in books by himself and also co-authored with Paul Dupuis, that this is the case. But so he developed this for discrete time Markov chains in an optimal control setting. But actually, one can observe, well, this actually works for general Markov processes. And so the idea is, as I said, approximation of the target process so that's what we are going to do. We are going to approximate the target process by continuous time Markov chain. And we see, so similarly to Kouchner, what we will do is we will, in each stage of the approximation, we will explicitly solve the barrier option price. And so the advantage of this approximation is that at any stage you get an arbitrage-free model price. So you get consistent pricing at any stage. So what we are going to do then, of course, we say, okay, we don't just have any Markov chain. We say we have our target Markov process. And our target Markov process then allows us to, by suitably approximating its infinitesimal generator, construct a whole sequence of Markov chains that converges to the target process. Each member of the sequence, we can explicitly calculate the barrier option price, And then, and so the suggestion is then, okay, if you approximate this incidental generator, then this convergence will carry over to Berry option prices. This is the intuition, and this is in principle one could wave hands, say, okay, this is the case, but we can actually establish it and prove it. So this is the idea. So we are now going to, introduce this modeling framework and describe how this algorithm then really works in practice, if you make it precise. So what is the idea? We say, okay, we have a one-dimensional microprocess on the state space R plus, and we also require it, the discounted process, to be marginal. In principle, for the method, this is not needed, but we are in the setting of pricing, so we say we make this assumption. Now, obviously, the class, even one-dimensional class of microprocesses, includes a fair number of rather pathological cases, and so these need to be excluded. So you need to assume, you need to make some assumptions. So what we assume is that the semigroup, and so what is a semigroup? Well, this simply, so we see what this is. This is simply the undiscounted price of a European option, maturity little t, and payoff f. So this is always, when you encounter this, you can always think of that as a European option. You're undiscounted, I don't do discounting, an undiscounted European option price, payoff F, maturity T, and this little X is the spot value, so the starting value of the Markov process. And so we say, okay, this semigroup that needs to be a little bit regular, namely, we want it to be a feather semigroup. So we say, if F is a continuous function that tends to zero at infinity and tends to a finite limit is zero, then the same should hold true for the option price. So if the payoff is a continuous function that tends to zero at infinity and tends to a finite limit at zero, then the same should hold true actually for the value of the corresponding European option. And also we want that the value of the option as time tends to zero, so if you come closer and closer to maturity, that should go simply to the payoff. So these are rather reasonable assumptions. And second assumption, for us to have actually convergence of the Berry option prices, because this will be based on a weak convergence argument, and therefore you need to make sure that a certain cases are excluded. Namely, what you want here is that if you start at X, then the first time that you enter A and the first time that you enter the interior of A should almost surely be the same thing. So what you don't want is a process that exactly jumps to the boundary. So, this would be fairly, so exactly jumps to the boundary. And then, because what you want is that the first entrance time of the interior of A and the first entrance time of A should be the same. So what you don't want is a process that jumps to the boundary and then goes away from the set. So what you want is that the process simultaneously enters A and its interior. So this is almost all models satisfy this, except some compound Poisson cases with rather restricted jump measures. So we don't have to worry about that. But for completeness, to have a mathematical proof of convergence, we need to make this assumption. So as I already said, of course, we are dealing with Markov processes, so we know that the Markov process is determined by its infinitesimal generator. So we say, what are we going to do? We have this Markov process given to us. Modeling department gives us the Markov process. How do we construct? We need to have a systematic way of constructing the Markov chains. How do you do that? Well, you say, okay, I have Markov process. The Markov process is determined by its infinitesimal generator. Now, what is the infinitesimal generator? Well, you could say the infinitesimal generator is, so what is this? This is the European option with maturity t. So it's like the theta at zero. This is the financial way of saying it. Otherwise, the way of saying it is simply the derivative of the semigroup at t is zero. That is the infinitesimal generator. And the infinitesimal generator determines the Markov process. So in other words, if you know the infinitesimal generator, you know the Markov process. So So what are we going to do is we are going to approximate this into infinitesimal generator. And we say, okay, of course, this infinitesimal generator is related to the European option price, but we are interested in the Berry option price. But what I'm now, one of the points that I'm trying to make, that I'm now making, I'm going to make, yes, in difficult language, English, yes. The points that I'm going to make is that actually this barrier contract can be seen as a vanilla option, but the vanilla option not on the underlying S, but on a process that is related to S. So, namely, in the case of this general barrier payoff, we deal with the so-called stopped and discounted process. So the process that is stopped as soon as it enters the set A and that is discounted at rate R. Now that process is also a Markov process, and as you can see, we are interested in calculating these two expectations, and this can exactly be seen to be equal to the expectation of the stopped and discounted process at maturity. So that is the marginal distribution of the stopped and discounted process. So perhaps even more clearly, it can be seen here with the kill process. So kill process is a process that is before you enter the set, it simply is equal to S, and after you've entered the set, as soon as you enter the set, it jumps to some default state or graveyard state, which we denote here by this partial. And you see that the value of a knockout option is then simply equal to this expectation. And so, so you see here this, because you see, so for clarity, I should say S hat T minimum tau A is, of course, equal to S hat T, just for clarity. So that's a marginal distribution of the kill process. Now, the good news is now that the generator of the kill process and also the generator of the stop process can actually be easily obtained from the original generator. So I don't show here how, but I will show this in the case of Markov chains. So now I already jumped to Markov chains, and I will simply show how to obtain the corresponding infinitesimal generators in the case of Markov chains. So this is just to introduce some notation. So we have Markov chains, so we take a finite state Markov chain, so we have some finite number of states, and we will use this type of notation. So we will say if you have a matrix, then we will denote by this matrix x, y simply the x, y element of the matrix, and similarly for vector we will denote by phi x the element corresponding to x of this vector. And we will denote by x a continuous time Markov chain with the generator matrix lambda that will approximate the generator of the Markov process. Okay, so then we say, well, let us review this. Of course, everyone knows this. So you see, for Markov chain, the price of a European option with vanilla payoff simply given by this phi. Well, what is that? Well, as I already mentioned, this is simply the semigroup, the ordinary semigroup at maturity t. And what is that? That is simply this expression, where this is the matrix. This is matrix exponential. So you see here you have lambda. It's the generator matrix, you multiply with t, exponentiate, and you multiply with this vector phi. And then you take the element x, and that corresponds to your starting value. So that is your European option price. So it's rather not so difficult. You see, so European option price. So how do you obtain that when the underlying is modeled as a Markov chain? Well, what you need to know is generator matrix. You multiply generator matrix with maturity, you exponentiate, and you multiply with the vector that represents the payoff. Okay, so this is okay. And so, but now you say, okay, so how are we now going to deal with Berry options? Well, very, very similar. The only thing what I need to do is I need to obtain from the original generator matrix lambda, I need to obtain the generator matrices of the stopped and the kill process. So, of course, this is not very clear here, because there was a slight problem, because this should be lambda 1, 2, and this is lambda 2, 1. And this is again lambda 2, 1. This is lambda 2, 2, but you know, this is fine, because there's only one lambda 2, 2. So this is fine. So what is the idea? You start with an original generated matrix, and you say, okay, these are the states that correspond to the so-called continuation region, where you don't knock out. That we call that G hat. And so, of course, here then this is the complement. And so how do you obtain the generated matrix of the killed process, so the process that is killed upon entering this knockout set? Well, you simply take this sub-matrix. So that's sort of easy, isn't it? So you say, you know, you start with the original generated matrix, you simply take this sub-matrix, and that is the generated matrix of the killed process. If you want to have the stop process, well, that's almost the same. You simply have this original matrix and you zero out all those rows whose initial value corresponds to the knockout set. So that's what you do. It's a rather easy procedure to obtain from the generator matrix the two generator matrices corresponding to the Markov chains, to the killed Markov chain, and the Markov chain that is stopped upon entering this set A. Okay, so once you have those generated matrices, you are in business, because as we noticed, okay, these Barry options, these are just vanilla options on the underlying, when the underlying is given by the stop respectively killed a process. So this is what we get, and we know how to price European options. We just saw that. It's just an easy matrix exponentiation, and so that's exactly what we find here. So for example, here the knockout option. Well, it's just matrix exponentiation, but then of the right matrix, namely the matrix corresponding to the killed Markov chain, and again multiplication with this payoff vector G. And so here you have the same thing. If you want to have the rebate, then you need to look at the stop process, where this I tilde is simply an identity matrix, where you again zero out those rows that correspond to the knockout set. Okay, so this is sort of the theoretical basis, so it's very, very simple. So that's it. This is the idea. And so now you say, okay, how am I going to implement it? So you see, I have to do two things. So now we have made basically focused on the second point. So we say, okay, once we have the Markov chain, we know how to value knockout and rebate options, because once we have the generator matrix, we know how to obtain these two other generator matrices. And then we know how to calculate the very optimal prices, because we simply exponentiate and we multiply with the payoff factor. So that's very easy. So what is left is the point, okay, how am I going to construct an approximating Markov chain? Okay, so I'm given this Markov process. How am I going to approximate construct the approximating Markov chain? Okay, so there are two things. As you know, the Markov chain is determined by two things: its state space and its generator matrix. So there are two things that we need to construct. We need to construct the state space, and we need to construct the generator matrix. So we say, okay, for the state space, so what is needed for a good state space? You need two things. You need, on the one hand, the state space needs to sort of be dense enough. If you want to approximate the generator, the original generator, you need to have a state space that is sufficiently dense. You need to have sufficiently many points in areas that are relevant. On the other hand, your state space needs to be sufficiently broad, so it needs to sort of cover the whole, cover a sufficiently large area of the original state space where the original Markov process can move. So on the one hand, it needs to be sufficiently dense. On the other hand, it needs to be sufficiently spread out. Now, if you want to do that with a uniform grid, that's going to be computationally quite expensive, isn't it? You need to have, on the one hand, it needs to be dense, on the other hand, it needs to be wide, so, you know, you can see that you get a lot of points. So it becomes computationally not so interesting anymore, because it becomes too expensive. So what you say, okay, you say, well, this is, of course, not new. This is an idea that is well-known in numerical analysis and PDEs. What you do is you take a non-uniform grid. You take more points in areas that are of relevance. So you see, we have the discounted process is a martingale, so it's moving around a lot around the spot. And also, of course, the points where the boundaries are sensitive points where you need to put in a higher density of points. And the rest, you know, you take a lower density. So So on that hand, in that case, you still have that the generative matrix is dense in areas that are relevant, and you still, on the other hand, it is wide enough and covers enough sufficiently large part of the original state space. Okay, so this is how you construct the state space. So once you have a state space, you can start thinking of constructing the generator matrix. So how do you construct the generator matrix? Well, the generator matrix you construct by demanding that on a sufficiently large set of basis functions, it is close or matches, exactly matches the action of the original generator. So we will show that this requirement can be reformulated in terms of some system, and so you simply say, okay, the generator matrix simply needs to solve this system. And so, for example, in diffusions, this can usually be solved simply by tridiagonal matrix. In the case of jumps, you need to do some extra stuff, and so we will also, think about that. Yes, I see that I have to go faster, isn't it? I'm not going very fast. So if you do this and you make it take more and more points in your state space, and you construct your generator matrix as such that uniformly on these state spaces the approximating generator matrix is close to the original generator, and as n tends to infinity this distance goes to zero, then one can show that actually the corresponding Berry option prices, so one can prove that the corresponding Berry option prices also converge. So this is of course what you want to have. Now you want to have some theoretical justification for what we are doing, and so indeed one can prove that this converges, and even more, one can prove error estimates. And so I don't know how much time I have. I have to probably hurry a bit. I don't know. So when did you start? How much time do I have? 8 minutes. It's more than enough. Yes. So I say you see that I already mentioned here also the time grid, because this idea can also be extended to time inhomogeneous Markov chains. But for the moment, simply ignore this. You say you have a spatial grid. You know by Kn some fill mass of the jump measure, and you denote by this the mesh, then you can show that under sufficient regularity assumptions that I of course haven't printed here, actually the distance between the Berry option price in the limiting model and that in the Markov chain model, that decays linearly. So I say here linearly, but to be honest, there is one special case, and so if we have time left, then I will actually go in more detail, where actually you have a logarithmic correction term here. So this exactly occurs for those jump processes that are on the boundary of bounded and unbounded variation. In that case, it turns out that actually you have to add a logarithmic correction term. But in all the cases, you have so the theoretical rates are linear. It's linear in the time mesh for time inhomogeneous Markov chains, but otherwise, if you just are time homogeneous, you can ignore this. You are linear in the tail mass, so this is like the truncation error, and you are linear in the spatial mesh size for some constants C1, C2, and C3. Okay, so now we have a little time left, in which I can illustrate that actually in many cases, this estimate is a little bit too conservative, and actually you have quadratic convergence. And so I don't have that much time, so maybe I don't know. No, so let us simply let us quickly do diffusion models, just to get the idea, and then we jump to the to a more advanced model. So diffusion models, of course, is sort of well known. So you have diffusions, as E takes this form, the generator takes this form. And so as I said, the generator matrix you simply construct by matching instantaneous moments. So this corresponds to a certain set of functions that you take. So the set of basic functions you take, you want that the instantaneous moments of the limiting process and the instantaneous moments of the Markov chain are the same. That's what you want, and that results in this case in this nice system of three equations. And you can solve that. And so typically, this results in a three diagonal matrix. So this is of course very closely related to the trinomial tree. But of course here we have a continuous time Markov chain. So we can implement this, and we did this. And so for comparison, we also implement some other finite difference PDE scheme. I'm going to have to explain what this is. This is the time, you know, so this is how the time increases. So what is plotted here on the horizontal axis, so n is the number of elements in the state space, and log n is then the logarithm of that. And here on this axis, you have the logarithm of the absolute error. And so what you see is that this is decreasing, and this is a slope. I don't know if you can see it. But it is a slope of minus 2. So in this case, it does achieve, the model does achieve a quadratic rate in space. And so here, just for comparison, we have there is a finite difference Crank-Nicolson scheme. That is, so you see, so the point of this is, some people may say, it's not fair, this and that, but this is just, when you just do a standard Crank-Nicolson implementation. So you see, here's the difference between a uniform scheme, right, that you simply implement like that, or when you take a little bit more care when you choose your non-uniform grid. Yes?
For what kind of option do you choose?
This is for double knockout options. Yeah? Okay, so I don't have a lot of time, so I will quickly, let's see. So this is explaining the case of state-dependent jump measures. So what is the idea is here is, again, you're going to match these instantaneous moments, but the operator, in this case, is non-local. So what you also have to do is you're going to discretize this jump measure. And in this case, it's a little bit subtle, because you have a non-uniform grid, and at any point, you can only jump to, of course, to other points on the grid. So you get a discretization that is going to be spatially dependent, even if you have a Levy measure that is not spatially dependent. And so this is due to the fact that you have a non-uniform grid. So the idea is, so you simply deal with the jumps by you can take simply a standard discretization of the jump measure. So you assign to the intensity to go from x to x to some point x1 plus yi. Simply you assign some, you integrate the jump measure over some area around this point yi. So you can take yi to be some midpoint or left point or right point, whatever you like. And then once you've done this, you say, okay, now I can still try and match the instantaneous moments. So you subtract the bits that you already have done that are due to this jump component, and then you try and match these conditions. But you see, of course, this does not always, you know, this it's not always possible to solve to find for this LC a three diagonal matrix, because this bit could be very small. And this bit could be rather large, and so this could be this sign could be negative actually. So this is only going to work in this case. So this third equation, you might need to drop the third equation if you don't have a sufficiently large volatility or activity of the jump measure. So if you don't have that, so if you are in that degenerate case, you might need to drop that. And of course that then you suffer a little bit in the rate. But you still will always obtain this linear rate. But if you can do this, if you can also do this third equation, so this is when you have strictly positive volatility, or when you have sufficiently, when you have enough activity, let's say activity in the jump measure, then you typically you can do this, and you can. And we see that in some cases, one therefore gets a quadratic rate rather than linear rate, which would be expected by the theoretical, rather conservative estimates. Okay, this is CGMY, but if we don't have CGMY, we go straight to to some local levy model, because this was, of course, our motivation, right? So we have to show that we can do something that other people didn't do. Of course, first we showed that we could do things that other people could also do. So, you know, that we could match. But, it's like a sanity check, right? So you'll first check that the model can actually do things that other people have also done. It's like a sanity check. And then you show that you can also do something that other people haven't done. So, example of this is a local levy model. So what is the idea? Well, you simply say, well, we know we would like to have the CV type volatility because, this has been argued extensively. We need that. We have level dependent volatility. So we say, okay, why not take that? On the other hand, we want volatility. We want jumps. So we say, okay, we have this volatility. We drive it by a levy process. Why not? So, and for the levy process, in this case, we take, the Wiener process and we add a compound Poisson process. And where the jumps here are of this type, and so we coined this model the CEV-KU model because it is both CEV and KU at the same time. So therefore, it's CEV-KU, CEV-KU model. And so you see it has binding motion, has some compound Poisson processes, and the generator I described in the general case. And so you see, in particular, for beta is zero, we do reduce to the KU model. But for general beta, we have a nice stochastic volatility, and the jumps are driven by this KU model, so CV KU model. And so we thought, okay, let us implement that. And these are the results. So again, we didn't take a double action. This is for a up and in call option, isn't it? Is that correct? Up and in call option. Well, I don't have time to look it up, but I think it's up and in call option. Let me see. This is up and in call option. Yes, up and in call option. Up and in call option. So of course we didn't print the parameters here, but again, what you see that in this case we have nice quadratic rate. So our estimates. The theoretical estimates are conservative, and you see there are at least a number of cases where this rate is, where actually numerical results show that you actually have quadratic convergence rather than linear in space. So I already alluded to the fact that, of course, you can also do this for time inhomogeneous case. So if you have a time inhomogeneous Markov process, you can say, I'm going to approximate this by a Markov process that has a time piecewise constant. Piecewise constant generator in time, and then each bit I simply approximate by a Markov chain as I did before, and then using the Markov property you can simply crank out everything, and so as a consequence of the Markov property, for example, for the double knockout option, you simply get a product of of these matrix exponentials that we had seen before. But, yeah, I don't know. I still have time? Yes, still have time. No? Minus? No? We don't want it to be killed off. So, okay, so in the paper you can find this. This example, the Sartor process, is an example of a time inhomogeneous Markov process. And so they have CGMY introduced this, and they had some reasons for doing this, and we also, implemented that as a second example. Okay, so just a brief summary. So this was for a general class of models. We showed consistent pricing of European and barrier options, easy, robust implementation, and we gave convergence and error estimates. And should you be interested in the paper can be found online. And you are welcome to have a look there.